Welcome to My Stupid Podcast, episode 9. I am Angelo.
I'm Jim Cordinall. No, I'm Jeff Whitman. I don't know. I'm sorry.
Are you coming up with those on the fly?
Yes. Oh, okay. I have nothing prepared. I just say.
The other one was good.
I don't remember what the other one said last time.
But yes, this is My Stupid Podcast, episode 9. We are an all John Mayer podcast where we talk about all things John Mayer. And we're just two Texans who love John and decided to start a podcast. Jeff had hosted a John Mayer podcast for a little bit, and now we're kind of doing this one together. So we want to just invite you to follow us on all the socials, wherever you're at, we're there. We're on Facebook, we're on Instagram, we're on Twitter. If you just search My Stupid Podcast or My Stupid Cast, you'll be able to find us. It's not too hard. I've been posting some cool Mayer battles over on Facebook and Instagram, and those have been fun.
Those have been very entertaining.
It's been interesting to see. You know, some of them are very lopsided, but some of them, you know, kind of down the middle on some of these.
I'm surprised. Sometimes I see them and I go, oh, easily it's this one, right? And then I see the answers and I'm like, what is going on?
So go participate in those. They're fun. We're just kind of pitting two things of two, either two songs or just two aspects of John or anything like that. I'll be doing those for a little while. I have a whole list of Mayer battles where we're pitting two things against each other and you can choose your side. So that's pretty fun.
They're of thematic relevance too. They're not like just random.
Oh yeah, they're not. Yeah,
hey, I'm trying John's to make hair in this photo or his guitar strap in this photo. Like, it's not two random things.
That's right. Yeah, I'm trying to make sure that they're kind of like at least related a little bit. So go join us on the socials. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to leave us a positive review wherever you listen, or a rate or a follow or whatever way you can rate. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, it's so easy. It takes like less than 30 seconds to go over and just hit five stars. We'd love the five stars. If you really like the show and you have some more time, you could even leave a review. We'd love that. We have a few reviews over there. So I think we have about 5 or 6 reviews, at least on the U.S. side. And about
23 ratings, five star
ratings. 23 ratings, five star ratings. So get that back up. That helps the show get discovered.
Six reviews.
As you do that. So we appreciate it if you do that, or on whatever platform you do. You can email the show. mystupidpodcastshow@gmail.com. We do read the emails. Chances are if you email us, we will read it on the show, which is what we're going to do right now.
By the way, everybody, I converted the Facebook page from bigger than my podcast, my previous Mayer podcast, to this one. So it's My Stupid Cast is the username.
Excellent.
On Facebook. So follow us there. Another place to follow us.
That'd be great. Just follow us on all the socials, share all that stuff. We love it. We do have a couple emails, so I'm going to read those. The first one is from Andrew Ortman, who's emailed the show before. And he says, I 100% remember the Another Kind of Green merch. I think there was maybe even a guitar case. That's what he said. So I did some deep diving this week, and there was definitely, I mean, there was like a messenger bag. I think like he did do a guitar case, and it was all this green stuff. Not green in color, but environmentally friendly merchandise. And
sounded vaguely familiar as you were discussing it, but I just, it was kind of like this thing that suddenly disappeared into the abyss, I guess, on the internet.
It wasn't very popular. Yeah. Maybe it was, but it was just one of those things that he probably tried and just didn't really stick or whatever. And okay, well, that was a good year and a half, 2 year run of something. And now we're moving on. So anyway, our next email is from Matthew Chappelle, friend of the show.
Yes.
Who's emailed quite a bit. We enjoy these emails, Matthew. He's going to say here. Okay, I'm just going to say it, and please don't hate me. And he's talking about Try. This wasn't that good of an album to me. I love his blues playing.
He blocked his email after he said that, right?
That's right. Sure. Okay. Well, former friend of the show. No, I'm just kidding. He says, I love his blues playing 10 times more than the bubblegum pop stuff, but song choice, I think, killed this album. Excuse me. The set from Where the Light is light years better, in my opinion. And he says, probably out of most of his releases in my bottom two or three. He's not a fan of more than half the set list, he says, partially because I don't like the song and partially because I don't think the trio pulled them off. I'm not a big fan of Out of My Mind, Another Kind of Green, Wait Till Tomorrow, and I Got a Woman. Wait Until Tomorrow, man. That's a
Oh, that's such a good track when John plays it, though. That's true. Man, I don't get that.
He says he's not a fan of this version of Gravity or Something's Missing. I can see that. I can understand, like, if you really like the Continuum and Heavier Things versions of those songs. Mm-hmm. But Gravity's not really that much different.
It's just like a little too bare. I mean, you know, when he plays it full band on Where the Light Is, for example, and it's a full piece, like full 7-8 whatever piece band behind him, it's like, dude, and that version is my favorite version of Gravity. So, I mean, I get it. It's a little bare comparatively.
He says, I feel different song choices would have fit better. Come When I Call, Every Day I Have the Blues, and Bold as Love should have been here, in my most unpopular opinion. I could see those.
On the other hand, I do agree with those three songs, though. I was kind of wondering about Every Day I Have the Blues in particular, why it wasn't there.
Well, he continues. He says, on the other hand, another very unpopular opinion, this version of Daughters is so much better than the original, which, sorry, Matt, I got to disagree, man. This is... he says it sounds closer to the demo that was released, which is
not that good, accurate, in my opinion, but it does sound like it, but it's just not that good, in my opinion.
And this is what he says, which is just so dang good, which is funny. Right. It's funny.
All right, Matt.
Side note, the only better version of Daughters to me is with Brad Paisley, where it sounded like the song was written for Paisley to sing.
Yeah, it's a good version.
Good Love on the Way is probably up there with Daughters to me. Killer tone. It's amazing what a Strat and an Ibanez tube screamer can accomplish. I don't know if that's what he was playing on there, but I assume. All right.
Yeah, we have no way of knowing.
He says, I know you're about to do Inside Wants Out. That album is down there with Try, in my opinion.
Wow.
So he's even he says, I'm assuming at this point, my friend of the show card is now invalid.
Wow. Okay. So he knew how we'd react. Okay. That's great.
We jest, right? And he says, take care. Looking forward to the next episode. If you haven't yet, listen to DMB Piedmont Park. And he does that. So here's the deal. We jest because obviously Jeff and I have similar opinions on a lot of this stuff.
Yeah.
Yes, they are majority opinions, I think. I mean, I think, you know, some of it comes from fanboyism. Some of it comes just from nostalgia, but you're allowed to have, again, how many times we're going to say this, right? You're allowed to have an opinion about music. It's subjective. That's what it is.
Yeah.
You're allowed to not like things of your favorite artist. John's my favorite artist. There are things I don't like.
Wait till we talk about Paradise Valley or some of the stuff on, Battle Studies. I'm trying to think of other ones, but
I mean, there's definitely albums, you know, and you say, you know, there's bottom albums. There has to be.
Yeah.
Like there have to be albums you don't like as much as you like other ones. So, you know, Matt, I appreciate it, man. We appreciate the opinions. Keep them coming. We, you know, if you like, agree with what we say, don't agree with what we say, perfectly fine. We'd love to hear from you anyway. So, and you're definitely still a friend of the show because real friends disagree with each other and tell them when they're wrong. So we're going to tell you when you're wrong, Matt, which is now.
Your wrong opinion.
All right. Last email is from Nick Scalia 16. Nick, he says, hey, guys, just started listening to your podcast yesterday. So this was sent just this week. I've listened to the Room for Squares episode. I'm currently on Heavier Things, and as a fellow John Mayer fan, I'm loving the content. I'm learning so much about the making of or inspirations behind the music. I also love hearing your own opinions on the music as well. I wanted to let you know of a John Mayer documentary on YouTube called Someday I'll Fly.
It's great.
It's a great documentary. He continues, you know, tells us a little bit about that, who made it, and he would recommend it if we haven't seen it. And if you haven't seen it, you should go watch it. What is it, like an hour or something like that, maybe?
Like 90 minutes something?
Yeah. For those of you that don't know, and this is what Nick writes as well, it's from it's chronicles John's life from childhood through Paradise Valley, because that's when it was released. So he posts a link to the documentary. If y'all haven't watched that out there, that's a great documentary to go watch.
Just go
on YouTube, Someday I'll Fly, John Mayer. And basically this fan just put it together from existing footage.
He somehow weaved a narrative into there. That's really impressive.
Really, really cool. And I think he even got like some recognition from John about it.
Yeah, he met John. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he posted, I think it was on Reddit or Facebook about it.
When he, because it was like a big deal, like they specifically invited him to come backstage, like, oh, you're Eastwood Out, like it's Eastwood Out, we got to get him on the show, for crying out
loud. I think he's actually mentioned about, I think he messaged us one time or something about coming on the show, or a comment or something, and we should talk to him about that at some point, for sure. That's a, that should be a show.
But yeah, so, he's gotten recognition directly from John about it.
Yeah. Very, very good.
I'm sure it's weird for John to watch that. It's like, it's my life.
Oh, yeah.
It's really, it's got to be such a weird thing.
It really does, because, you know, this guy had to, in a sense, it's like this guy just dug into my life and put it out there. But, you know, I think he appreciated it, and it's pretty cool. There's not really been a documentary about John Mayer.
No. And you can find other ones that are, like, kind of fan-made, too, but...
Yeah, nothing to the degree of what
nothing
he did,
to the
though.
Degree, not as thorough as Someday I'll Fly. The I forgot to mention on the previous episode of Try that there is a I think it was on the CD. You know how sometimes you put the CD into your CD-ROM on your computer and there's a DVD suddenly.
There's like a random thing there. Yeah,
I think there's a video on there on Try where he where it's just like a 7-minute thing explaining the John Mayer Trio and how they came together. And,
So if you listen to the episode, I put a little clip at the beginning of it. Of him talking about it, and I think it's from that thing. Like I inserted a clip from YouTube where he's talking about the blues and getting into that with the trio. So I think the ending quote is the best,
where he's like, "I'm not trying to like deride my solo stuff, but like, come on." That was like my favorite quote. But come on.
Yeah. Well, let's jump in to Inside Wants Out,
appropriately chosen and titled for. Present times.
Oh yeah, that is true.
Yeah, super relevant. That's title cool. Accidentally relevant.
So Inside Wants Out, debut EP by John Mayer, released by Mayer Music LLC on September 24th, 1999. So independently released by him in 1999. Then it's what would lead him to get signed to Columbia, who would release Room for Squares, who would then re-release this, Inside Wants Out, on August 2nd, 2002. A little bit different, and we'll get into that. But that's the version I have. I don't have the original one. I have the Columbia release.
I don't even think I have a physical disc for this. I always listen to it digitally.
I didn't even know it existed. I'll tell you, I was into Room for Squares. I was barely getting into John. I think maybe I had Any Given Thursday, and I was starting to get obsessed, and I had a friend walk in. I was working the desk at our dorms, you know, like how where people check in and stuff in college.
Yeah
I was at our dorms, I was working that desk, and my friend came in and he held it up. He was like, look what I found.
And
I was like, what is that? And he came in and like we put it in the computer and started playing it, and like it was awesome, man. I totally remember that. It was such a cool memory. I was like, this is, and at the time I was like, oh my gosh, where did you find that? I think he found it at Half Price Books or something, but it was still the Columbia release.
Yeah.
And I was like, we thought, oh my gosh, you found something, you know, we were like, you found something rare. Like this might, you know, it's like, was this like this independent release that only a few were made? You know, we had no idea. The internet wasn't that big at that point yet, where we were like going to it for information for everything. Now if somebody came in, you'd be like, oh wait, let me go see when that was made. Oh yeah, that's the Columbia release version, let me look at the number there. Okay. You know, you would know,
we're all a bunch of know-it-alls now, because of everything that's available to us.
But back then it was like magic. Isn't that cool? Like stuff like that was magic, you know. You didn't really, you would get glimpses of stuff, or you didn't know everything about your favorite rock stars or entertainers or whatever, and kind of miss that a little bit to an extent.
I do too, big time.
Because now we know exactly what they're like. Like, we get Cecil now, which is great. But that kind of
I follow everybody out of obligation. I participate in all the things on social media because I feel like I'm supposed to, and that's the only way to stay connected, especially now. But
remember what stuff was like? It was like you didn't know everything about your guy or your gal, whoever you followed, or the band that you followed.
Yeah, you just loved them for the content they made. Yeah,
and there was this mystery behind them. Like, what do they like? What do they like to eat? you know, and it was like, could I be friends with them? Like, you know what I mean? Like, there was this whole thing, yeah. And it's gone now, but
it's gone.
Anyway, so he comes in and that was my first listen. What about your first listen to this album?
I couldn't even tell you. I feel like this has like always been a part of my life since I heard his stuff. You know, no such thing was out as a single already by the time I first heard his music. And after that, it was like, and I was learning for like a weekend. I was so busy learning No Such Thing on guitar because I was still had just picked up the guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was on the journey to find his other stuff. And really, this Inside Wants Out was like top of the search list when you would search his songs, because this is the stuff that people listen to over and over again because it had all the tricky, especially Neon had all the tricky guitar stuff on it.
Right.
So everybody was listening for that at that point. Yeah, I don't remember. I don't remember the first listen though, because this one I was listening to way more than Room for Squares as a whole.
Yeah,
especially because I was just trying to learn. Not Neon. I've probably currently the closest I've ever been to actually playing Neon right now. But back then, no way. But the other stuff, yeah, I was like, cool. Let's learn these songs.
Yeah.
So that's why I was, because you can hear them. You can hear them in this. There's no. The mix is just guitars and vocals for the most part. There's some other backing stuff, but there's no percussion or bass to tell you what you're playing is wrong.
That's right. Yeah,
it's harmonizing with it to distract you.
You are exactly right on that. It's a great. You know, this is a great album for Mayer fans, and you know, great EP. Just looking at production history, you know, we know the story. If you're a big Mayer fan, you know the story. But John enrolls in Berkeley. He meets Clay Cook there. Is that correct? Like, that's what I saw, but I imagine, I think they're both at Berkeley. And
yeah, they're college friends.
And Clay Cook gets him to move back to Georgia, which is where Clay's from, I guess. And they start Lo-Fi Masters, which you have listened to some of their stuff. I actually haven't really listened to any of the Lo-Fi Masters stuff.
We can do a totally separate episode about the demo they did, because it's like five songs and three of them are on this EP.
So they begin frequenting, you know, coffee shops and little clubs and stuff like that. Eddie's Attic, most famously, right? They win a bunch of open mics there.
And this is like in 98.
Yes.
98, 99 is when I started seeing pictures of the earliest pictures I could find.
Right. And he kind of gets on a rotation at Eddie's Attic where he's playing like all the time.
Yeah.
I was even, I looked up an interview today. It's a really good interview. I'll post it on Facebook and Instagram if you want to find it. But it was just by another musician who I guess also wrote for like a local magazine in Atlanta. And he wrote an article and did an interview with John right at about the time Heavier Things was coming out. And it has a lot of information about, because he spent time with him around this time. So it has a lot of information about this time, which is where some of this is going to come from that I'm going to talk about today. But he basically said that like John would kind of became like an on-call person. Like if so-and-so, oh, the van broke down for this band coming tonight, or so-and-so got sick, they would call John and be like, hey, can you come play? We don't have anybody tonight. And he'd just come.
So many multiple versions of shows and recordings from
because he just did it all the time. I think at one point he and Clay Cook with Lo-Fi Masters were there on a rotating basis every month or two times a month. But then on top of that, John would just play whenever there was an open spot or they needed somebody, they would call him. He was basically like their on-call guy and he would just come play. So he's there. You know, obviously he and Clay Cook, different direction they kind of want to go, so they split up. John wants to do more pop music, you know.
Yeah, according to Clay, that was what it was that separated them. I'm sure there was an attitude clash in general. Yeah. According to John, him owns admission that he was not in the right space as a musician to collaborate with another songwriter that was also kind of like an alpha. So I mean, they both have like just. You know, John probably was like, I know best. And Clay was like, I know best. And there was like, okay, well, this isn't going to work.
Yeah, this is never going to work.
Yeah, John has such a mathematical mind for pop music that it just makes sense.
Of course.
Especially when you hear the songs that he wrote solo on this album.
Yeah.
Or he's credited as solo.
So he finds this producer, Glenn Matulo. I couldn't find much about him. except for one thing. Glenn Matullo is responsible for producing a lot of Sean Mullins music, particularly Lullaby, that song from like 98.
Yeah. Oh, I'm familiar.
Everything's good. Yes. Yeah. I was listening to
it. It's the one where
morning.
He just talks the entire song except the chorus.
Yeah, he's like,
girl down there by the church pews or something. What is he talking about?
Yeah. And yeah, he's playing along while he's just talking, and then he starts into the chorus. So he produced that song. He's produced a bunch of other stuff, but nothing on the level of that and then of this. From this interview, this guy interviews Glenn Matullo as well, and says that he would see him play. This guy Glenn would see John play, and he says John didn't have anything to sell at his shows. He didn't have a dime to his name. This is a quote. I thought he was an incredible guitarist and a great songwriter, so I financed the CD for him. The whole reason that disc sounds so stripped down is because John was playing solo shows at the time, and we wanted to capture what he did live. So,
That's the best thing that they could have done for him at the time.
Yeah, definitely. That John's live performances are what makes him kind of stand out, especially at this point, right?
Yes.
And so they're trying to capture what does the coffee house vibe, the club vibe look like. That's what we want on the CD. So that's what he ends up doing. They go and they record this. This guy Glenn finances it. He pays for it all.
I didn't know all that. That's
yeah, I thought that was interesting.
Super rare for a producer of any on any level. Super
yeah,
rare.
Yeah. But you know, it says. I didn't know any of that either. This article is really, really good. I'll send it to you, Jeff, to read. Then, like I said, I'll post it on the socials as well. But they end up recording it, right? Starts spreading around, and he starts getting written up in the press, right? Atlanta Press. But it's not until Birmingham that it actually gets played on the radio, right? So... and this is where we get from Any Given Thursday, where he talks about, right, this started here in Birmingham or whatever. In the same interview.
And he shout outs this very specific
name. WRAX.
Yeah, exactly.
That's exactly it. And so in this story, it says that there was a DJ there, Reg, I guess, is what or Reg. I don't know if they call him Reg, but he hosted a program on this thing called Reg's Coffee House. Mm-hmm. And... it was basically just like adult alternative type stuff. And what he says is a fan sent him the CD. A mayor fan sent this DJ a CD and the guy starts playing it. That would never happen today. Like that.
No.
That's such a... Have you ever seen the movie Airheads?
It's been a long, long time since I've seen it. But didn't they hold... The whole premise is they hold the place hostage until somebody plays their record.
They're like, we got to play our demo on the radio. That's how we're going to get discovered.
Right. You
know? It's such a funny premise. It always reminds me... I always laugh at that same premise in Back to the Future, where at the very beginning, him and Jennifer Parker are walking, and she's like, you have to send your demo tape to the record company, Marty. You know, it's like, they're going to love it. Really? Like, is that how it worked? Like, you just send it in to the record company, and then they decide...
It sits on a shelf or a desk and untouched unless you have, like, somebody that you know there.
That's right. And in Airheads, yeah, that's the whole thing. They're like, we got to get it played on the radio, you know, and they hold it up, right? And it's so funny. But that's what happened.
With Reg, though, it must have been a thing where, like, I guess I'm bored enough to try all these things that fans are sending me or something. Or maybe there was a letter included that was...
So it says, a fan sent him a CD. He started playing it. This is John talking now. He says, I got in my car, drove over there one day to do the morning show, and then it started rolling. And the writer says, I asked Reg, I don't know, just send us an email if you know who this
Reg,
guy
Reg.
Is.
It's just both.
He said, why did Birmingham embrace John before Atlanta did? And he says, it's an easy one. It was the relationship that existed between the radio, and the local retailers and the music lovers in Birmingham. It was a textbook example of how it should be in every market. I just think that is so... A fan sent in the CD. Oh, yeah, this is good. I'll play this. I actually don't think DJs have, do they have even like the ability to do that now? Like, are they even allowed to play music?
I think it depends on the company and what type of show you're running. Like, if you have your own show and you're the producer of it, you know, I'm sure you have a lot of say in what goes on the playlist.
Right.
What you can spin. Right. But if it's an overproduced like morning show or something, you have producers that tell you like, what you need to be
playing. Here are the 20 songs you can play for the next 3 months.
And this label says we have to play this because they bought spins or whatever, however it works.
Yeah.
The business logistics, but that sounds about right. So yeah, that's just that. Birmingham's not like a small place. So I know Birmingham.
No. You
know?
Yeah.
So it is pretty crazy that I guess it was a different times. It probably doesn't operate this way anymore, but it kind of makes sense though that it would operate this way at that time. And then late 90s, early 2000s, kind of makes sense.
It's so cool. It's just such a different time in the time of Spotify and YouTube today.
Mm-hmm.
And the oversaturation of music today. Anybody can write any music at any point and put it out there, which is good and bad. Back then, the fact that it kind of got launched a little bit. I mean, he probably would have launched anyway. But the story we have is a fan sent a CD to DJ and then it started getting radio play. That's like how much it's like a fairy tale. You know what I mean? Like, it's so cool. It's so cool. I love that. Anyway, so they record and do all this. And there wasn't a lot of critical response when it came out just because it was an independent EP. Most of the critical response came after it was re-released because, okay, John Mayer's on the scene now.
He's on the radar now. He's on everybody's radar now,
And, you know, it got anywhere from 3 to 4 stars for the most part.
They saw the potential. They saw the potential, I think. Yeah.
You got a lot of cool stuff happening as far as musicians. You have obviously John, you have De La co-producing and playing bass on some things, and he's credited for drum loop on track one, which I tried to listen to it the other day to see if I could even hear the drum loop, but I don't.
The drums do sound, now that you say that. And I'm just now reading it. I don't know why. I've been on this wiki page many times before, but yeah, that's a loop, man. I can hear the electronicness of the drums on Back to You. That sounds right.
And there was a drummer on it. There was. So here's the deal. There's a drummer on it. His name's Sigador Berkus, also known as Siggy. Okay, that's kind of his name. I guess that's his nickname. Looked him up, can't find much about him. I think he owns a studio in Chicago right now. But he also played drums for like some TLC albums. That's the other thing.
Oh.
You know, they pull him in. They pull Matt Mangano or
Mangano? Jono?
I think it's Mangano, who plays bass for Zach Brown Band now. So I imagine that's him and Clay
Cooker.
That's
why his name, because I've seen Matt Mangano around the John circle.
Yes.
Early on when John mentions him by name in one recording. Might have been Breakaway or something. I can't remember. Him and Clay Cook both are Zach Brown Band.
That's right. Yeah. So they have the connection there. I imagine either one, whoever joined first, probably got the other guy the gig.
It sounds like they were inseparable because track 7 was not recorded with Glenn Matullo. It was recorded on the Lo-Fi Masters demo.
Oh, it was.
Yeah.
That's the same track.
Comfortable, yeah. Comfortable is from the Lo-Fi Masters sessions, but they just remixed it. And, like, the strings come in super early on the demo.
Okay, I didn't know
so
that.
They shifted the dynamic, the instrumental dynamic, but it's the same recording. You can,
which is why
you can hear the guitar buzzing and everything in the same spot. So.
Yeah. And it says here, you know, he did record it in all tracks except 7, which means that one already existed. That makes sense. You have a bunch of, you know, obviously Clay Cook doing a lot of stuff, De La doing a lot of stuff, but for the most part,
Clay Cook and him were separated before John even recorded this.
This is
what I'm gathering from the personnel, because Clay Cook only is credited with track 7 as a guitar.
As far as a performer. Yes.
Yes.
So
he did
although
write
he wrote
some of this stuff with John, probably as far back as Berkeley.
Yeah.
But as far as I think he was already done by the point John went into the studio for this.
So let's talk about the cover and kind of the packaging.
It's the one where he's sitting somewhere.
I didn't realize he was at like a diner table until I looked at it yesterday. I was like, oh, he's sitting at a table. There's somebody in the back on those stools. I was like, oh, he's in the diner.
I wonder if it was a situation where he was like, hey, can you move out of the shot? And the guy's like, no, I'm eating. All right, well, let's just take the picture.
Just leave him in there. I don't know why I never actually realized. In my mind, I just see him sitting. But now I'm like, oh, he was in a...
Yeah, it's kind of like me with the Room for Squares one. I never really looked at the full picture, and you were like, hey, man, he's got that guitar over there. And I'm like, what, there's a guitar?
Yeah. It's just, you know, it's one of these things. We look at it all the time, and we don't see anything.
Don't process it.
It's very 90s looking.
It is.
It looks like a 90s acoustic album. Like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that is what it looks like an acoustic singer-songwriter album. I looked up this lady, Carol Farrar Norton, who did the graphic design for it. Okay, so I was like, I want to see who this lady is. She is a graphic designer, kind of a freelance person. And if you look her up, she has a whole website with all of her stuff. And obviously, you know, she does have a lot of CD art that she's done, like this. Mm-hmm. But she's known for doing a lot of National Geographic magazines and National Geographic Kids layouts and magazines. So, like, if you're like in a National Geographic Kids thing and it opens up and it's like 10 facts about the sun, and it has like, you know, one, it is, you know, this large and it has a picture of the sun, and two's in a different color font. You know what I mean? Like, it's this kind of grid across like a centerfold type thing. Mm-hmm. That would be her. Like, she does stuff like that. Gotcha. But she also does like all this other National Geographic work where she designs like whole books, like almost like coffee table type books, or just special National Geographic stuff. That's kind of her niche, it looks like. But somehow she got this. She got this.
Yeah. Kind of like the credits for almost everybody behind the scenes is like kind of like somehow this person is a mixing on this.
That's
one,
right.
And somehow,
that's right. Yeah.
Tom Wages is the photographer. I don't.
Yeah. I looked up both. I looked up Tom Wages. Couldn't find anything about him. I did not look up Tyson Marsh.
Yeah, these are just
Marsh.
People that
Sorry,
were hired
man.
Locally. It sounds like.
That's right. But so she has this in her portfolio. She says this was the album that launched John Mayer, that got him signed to Columbia, and she puts it out there. She said it says that she designed it in a day.
Oh wow.
Yeah, she was like, we rushed it in one day.
It shows by today's standards. It doesn't really, I don't really know what was available back then, but I could Photoshop that cover today.
Oh, yeah.
That's like something you could do in PowerPoint, not even Photoshop. But back then?
Yeah.
It was probably good. I don't know. Yeah. You know.
Well, yeah. If you look at the rest of the CDs she's done, which are all like acoustic independent artists, I didn't know 99% of them. I couldn't even tell you the artists.
Yeah.
And I think she did a Sean Mullins also, so maybe that was the connection.
Of course.
But
taking my picture on my my lullaby
while
impression.
I'm in a diner ordering some coffee.
Everything.
But they all look like this. Like, they all look like 90s acoustic. Mm-hmm. You know, light rock type album covers. So, it is what it is. My wife actually
She's got a niche for.
That's right.
Who she shoots for or who she designs for. Yeah.
My wife has has her Inside Once Out CD signed by John. So, she has a lot of things signed by John because she followed her and her sister followed him. On a tour, like they went to all three Texas shows one year, like in 2003 or four or something like mm-hmm. that. And that's all they did. They spent like the whole weekend going to San Antonio and then here and then Dallas. And they got to meet him like multiple times, and they got to meet him and the band like multiple times. So they have all this stuff and pictures signed. This was back whenever you could like wait, like you could get there early and like see them come in and they'd come over and like sign stuff, or like, you know, you could wait after. Like, those times again long gone. Never,
dude. I did that with Matt Nathanson at this venue in Dallas, Gypsy Tea Room. Pretty sure
yeah,
that whole
yeah, yeah,
street
Gypsy
is
Tea Room,
gone.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure the whole street has no venues anymore because, you know, Curtain Club's gone, whatever. But yeah, Matt Nathanson, he still plays venues of that size, I'm pretty sure. But we closed that place down, man. Me and my friend Gabe, who's also a huge Mayer fan, and I think either I introduced him to Matt Nathanson or we both... either way, it was by proxy through John's music I found out about Matt Nathanson because I was in a songwriter mood. But yeah, we stayed till like... I mean, for like 2 hours we were talking to this guy. We closed the place down. We had to go outside to talk to him more.
Yeah.
That sounds insane right now.
Yeah, you would never do that anymore. And especially, you know, crazy. Even John, he was playing arenas. I mean, it wasn't like he was playing amphitheaters and arenas at this time.
Mm-hmm.
So he was already, I mean, Heavier Things was out, but it was just a different time. Like if you showed up at 3 p.m., there's a chance that you could have, and you were waiting out by the back of the venue. He might come out. You might see him and you'd wave and he might come over. You know what I mean? Like
it's so nuts. It's so nuts. Oh my God.
I'll have to have her on because she has a story of a guy claiming to be DJ Logic trying to invite her and her sister onto a bus. And they were like, no, we're not doing this. They're pretty sure it was not DJ Logic, but when he was opening for John.
Yeah, I recall when he was opening, he didn't come to my show when I was on the heavier, when I saw the Heavier Things tour. But that's of course you can just be like, oh, I'm the opener that nobody's heard of.
That's right. And you've never, you know, Google, I mean, smartphones aren't around. It's not like you could just Google him to see what he looks like to make sure, right? Like that wasn't, you didn't have a smartphone at that point. So anyway, I'll have to interview her for a bonus episode
catfish people like in real life.
Easily.
You know, back then.
How
so
many
crazy.
People were catfished? That they don't even know that they were catfished.
Right.
Oh yeah, I met so and so, or I got to get on the bus with so and so, or whatever.
There's a whole scene, a whole joke about that in the movie Game Night, but it kind of makes sense though, because she was like, "I hooked up with Denzel," and then it's a guy that kind of looks like Denzel. So it kind of works, but it's just so funny that's a movie that came out like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And they put a joke in there that would never go. That would never be able to play out right now.
That's right, because I would look him up. I would
be like, oh. Where does Denzel live? Oh, he doesn't live here, so you're not him.
Well, and then you just go to his Instagram or Twitter and see that he's in California right now. Like, you know what I mean? Like, oh, he tweeted 3 hours ago that he was, with his family. So, sorry, you're not him.
But it was played for a bit. That movie's really funny.
It's a hilarious movie. All right, let's jump into the track by track.
Yes.
Is there anything else we need to talk about as far as... There's not, I mean...
No,
low budget, live,
very low,
sound.
Clearly low budget because I think this all the credits that we went through sounds like a dude that was starting on the ground floor because you can't find a whole lot else about, you know, especially what the producer, mixer, and photographers did or graphic designers did. Session musicians will always be session musicians. You could find stuff on them anywhere.
Right.
But that's you can definitely tell that it's a ground floor project.
I love it because all the, you know, I even looked up like the studios and stuff. Most of these don't exist anymore, these studios.
That doesn't surprise me. Orphan
Studios
but they are
doesn't
smaller,
exist.
You know, much, much smaller studios.
Full Moon Studio does still exist. They have John, obviously, on their list of artists. Carol Farrar Norton, graphic designer, has her first on the CD listings that she's designed, you know. So it's just funny. All these people are going to say, oh, I was there. You know, and that's a cool thing to be able to say.
This is
I was
a good
there.
Project. Yeah, this is a good project to be able to say that on.
Yeah, yeah. So, all right, let's start out. Back to you. Only full band track.
You have no choice but to open the album with that. Then I guess you can call it. By today's standards, you would call this an album. Back then, I called it an EP.
Yeah,
because, you know,
it's an
eight
EP,
songs,
but,
nine songs. But now everybody's releasing 8 to 10 tracks as an album.
Right.
But yeah, if you have an acoustic EP, but you decided to include a full band song, why wouldn't you start with the full band song? It doesn't make sense to put it midway through. So it makes sense to me, even though it's not the strongest song, in my opinion.
An EP is considered, it has to be at least 10 minutes and a total running time of 30 minutes or less. Or it's considered 4 to 6 songs with a total running time of 30 minutes or less. Mm-hmm. This is actually at 31 minutes.
Oh, okay.
Or 34 minutes.
Barely an LP.
Yeah.
It would be considered an LP.
But, you know, I mean, we would call it an EP. Like, that's...
Yeah.
That it feels like an EP. It's about the same length. I wouldn't call it an album like at that point, but you know, whatever you want to call it. Officially, it's his first EP, but you would open it. Why the song? Why do you think they did full band? Do you think they thought this was going to be a single or something?
Maybe because they felt it was the most instrumentally complete and easiest to finish. Uh-huh. I could see that being a thing because time is money when you're at this stage in your career. It's always going to be time is money, but when you have less
time
of it, you're just kind of like
time is honey.
Yeah,
time is honey compared to according to Seth Green from Can't Hardly Wait. Sorry, I just watched that movie.
Can't hardly wait. I saw that once after all the hype, and I was like,
"Tom is honey," and he walked. Sorry. All right. Anyway, that's one of my favorite '90s movies.
All right. I'm glad you like it. So I do think this was because I've considered that too when I've wanted to record songs. Is like, which ones do I feel like I could just go in and out of?
Yeah.
If you have like 3-4 hours in a studio. What can we get done the fastest? Well, back to you, instrumentally, it's complete. Even though there's no friggin' chorus in the song, like, why are you doing this song? Why is this your featured track? It feels like they meant for this to be the featured track with them recording it full band and opening the album with it.
I would think so, too. It's very interesting. I didn't think about it until I was thinking about the track list, and I was like, they probably thought this could be a single. Like, this could be a lead-off. I mean, it's the lead-off song.
Yeah. Yeah, because who else is going to play radio-wise? Who else is going to play unless you're a coffee, whatever, Reg's coffee lap place?
Right.
Who else is going to play acoustic tracks exclusively? I mean, that's so rare.
Right.
Clearly they had something in mind for Back to You for it to open the album. And again, very weird. Doesn't structurally. And John had to know this. He went to freaking Berkeley. The structure of the song is not commercial at all.
No.
Even though there's an instrumental hook that works, you know, that works. It's great. But there's no set chorus. You have verses that start with the title, Back to You. So, I mean, you're going to remember the title.
Right.
You have like 3 verses and like there's a bridge between second and third verse and that's it. You know, and then there's a solo that's really cool and melodic, but it's a confusing song structurally for
and you don't. It's the cool thing about John, and this goes to show you with any artist who can do something like this, is that you don't really notice that there's not a chorus.
Yeah,
there's a song, back to Metallica. There's a song that they wrote that doesn't have a chorus that I didn't realize didn't have a chorus for like 20 years, and I was like, oh, there's just verses in this song, and the chorus is instrumental, and it feels like the where the chorus would be is just instrumental. But it's almost melodic enough to where it takes enough, like it's enough for you. You're like, and you don't realize, oh my gosh, this song doesn't have a chorus. It's the same thing here, right? Yeah. It's like for an artist to be able to do that and get one on you almost, like right, like you don't even realize it.
Yeah,
it's pretty cool.
Melodically, it's so good, and lyrically, it's got some stuff going for it. So, I mean, you're just kind of distracted by it being good that you don't really.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm thinking about it loud, thinking about it now aloud because we're podcasting. But when you're listening to it for the first time.
Right.
If you're like us, you like it. You like it as it is. But when if you're a record exec listening to it, you're like, I can't sell. Yeah. How am I going to sell this?
Yeah. There's no chorus. It's like it's basically like just like an A and a B. Like it's like an A, B, A, B type.
Yeah. Which is very folk. Kind of that's kind of an old folk song structure, almost like King of the Road.
Yeah, I mean, like coming from church world, hymns, a lot of hymns are just
hymns,
verse 1, verse 2, verse 3, verse 4. That's it.
Yeah,
you know, there's no choruses.
Ends with like the ends or starts with the title or whatever.
Yeah. So let's just put it on the table here. Most of these songs, with the exception of one or two, don't sound as good as their studio versions or even their other live versions.
The full band versions,
Yeah, like Back to You does not sound as good as Room for Squares version, in my opinion.
But Any Given Thursday's version is better than all of them.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. So you got Siggy playing the drums there, though, you know?
Yeah. And apparently there's a Moog,
There's a Moog, bass. There's obviously drum loops.
Must be very subtle.
I don't hear it. And again, choices, you know, maybe that's
must
a
be just a layer thing. Yeah.
But you know, it's the same format, everything as far as the Room for Squares version, right? Not much.
Yeah, nothing's
changed.
No.
Sounds a little bit better,
mm-hmm.
as far as production wise, but everything sounds very clean here. I mean, super, super clean. Again, going back to that late '90s, early 2000s sound. This definitely sounds like an independently produced album. And this song sounds like it's independently produced.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
So yeah, I mean, not much to say. I love this song. This is one of my favorite deep cuts on, No Such Thing. I keep calling it No Such Thing. It's called Room for Squares. This is one of my favorite deep cuts on Room for Squares.
The three song, one syllable thing.
Yeah,
three title,
da, da, da.
Three word,
da, da,
one syllable.
Yeah.
Da, 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 yeah.
What do you, any last thoughts on Back to You?
No, I mean, I think the song's good. Decent. It was never been a favorite of mine. I mean, I like the last line because it kind of mm-hmm. switches up the storytelling.
Right, right.
By line, I mean last entire section, really, lyrically speaking. I think the solo is really cool.
I like the solo. Simple, really cool. Melodic, mm-hmm. you know, serves the song. So he could have easily done something a little bit more flashy, but he does.
Ask somebody, yeah, right. Yeah, and that's kind of how he starts out soloing a lot. Mm-hmm. Carries over to Room for Squares is like, cool, I'm going to do a melody here. I'm going to do another melody here and not really a showy solo.
Right.
You could argue that carries over to heavier things as well. But okay, so yeah, the Back to You, though, confession time. This is like the song that I would never like. If I was going back and listening through to Inside Wants Out to learn his songs, mm-hmm. This was barely a challenge for people that were learning guitar.
Right.
It's a lot of open chords.
And then he had the acoustic version, right?
Yeah.
The acoustic coffee house version was just him and De La.
Yeah.
That's a cool version.
That's kind of a cool version. Yeah.
I like that version a whole lot. You know, if y'all haven't listened to it, go YouTube it, Back to You acoustic.
He does go a little strum crazy or with it.
Oh yeah.
On that. He's much more rythmic with his playing. But this wasn't this version of the song. I just wanted to get to the acoustic stuff because that's the main reason I would listen to this album. It's like, I want to learn the acoustic stuff.
Let's move on to the acoustic stuff. No Such Thing.
It's a great version of the song. Super great
version
of the song. Yeah.
Is it slower?
There's My Stupid Mouth is slower too. There's quite a few slower songs on this one. Yeah.
Yes. I like it. I like the, you know, that kind of where he's doing the ding 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 ding, you know, at the beginning, and it's just
I'm super happy
the
leads didn't change really mm-hmm. going into the studio, the full band version, in Room for Squares. It's because they kept the do 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 do, and then they kept it do 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 do. Well, the solo's a little different in the
right.
They have like a synth solo in the Room for Squares one, but there's parts in between. There's some solo lead parts in between the verses, I guess. Kind of can't even remember them now. It's going to drive me crazy. Whatever. Anyway, they're good.
It's a good version of this song.
Yeah.
It does sound like when he plays it acoustic, it kind of sounds like this. So mm-hmm. again, not much changed. A little bit slower. You can definitely hear the youngness of his voice in the song too.
Yeah, he's much more whispery and. It's almost like he's more controlled just because he's not really, I don't know. I feel like they captured his voice the best in this EP, mm-hmm. especially when you compare it to like, if you go back and listen to the Lo-Fi Masters demo, you're like, what's going on with his voice in this? It's really weird. But I think they just captured it really well in all these songs, really.
Well, My
but
Stupid
yeah,
Mouth?
You can still tell. Super young voice. Yeah, this is a slower version of the song. It feels because it sounds like that. The full band version is just like it's like right, get into it, man.
Yeah,
and this one's more like no, man. Let's
it's a little laid back.
This is like a token up version.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. I feel this one. I love that secondary melody that guitar is playing.
Yeah, it sounds real, real good. the big difference in this one is they add the pre-chorus again after the bridge. So he plays it. He plays the pre-chorus. Yeah. He sings it longer, a second. Yeah. Which I'm kind of glad they took it out.
Same.
Yeah. I'm like, that was a good production.
I like that they were different.
Yeah.
Just twice and that's it.
Yeah. Definitely. I was like, that was a good produce. You know, a producer came in and was like, the song's too long. You don't need that in there. Yeah. That's just, you're
it's
just
faster
adding
and take out this one part. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You can tell when a studio gets their hands on something. You can tell. Or a label, well, I should say. A label.
But I mean, it could have been a producer too. A good producer will do that. A good producer will come in and be like, hey, this is, you know, you can do better, or you can change these lyrics, or remove this, make it tighter. Like, you know, it'll make it tighter. Yeah. So
it's for the better, I think. Yeah, this one, again, I like the way his voice sounds on this one. And the chorus is still one of my favorite choruses, dude, because I think, I mean, the entire story that he's telling builds up to that chorus just perfectly. Mm-hmm. And the notes, the melodically speaking, it's just such a good chorus. This is his, and that last one, No Such Thing, was him and Clay Cook. And Clay Cook does have a solo version of the song. It's a little slower. You can go YouTube that if you want. It's pretty decent.
In that interview that I was referencing earlier, he talks about when he first met John, when he was still, this was pre-Inside Wants Out, he's still playing Eddie's Attic and stuff like that. And he tells John asks him, what do you think of my music? Because I guess he was a fellow musician, and, you know, and he said he told him, he was like, John, you need to stop singing about running through the halls of your high school. No one wants to hear that. He puts that in there. And he was like, and then look what happened. He was like, you know, it was pretty funny. He kind of poked fun at himself that he told them that. No one wants to hear you singing about running through the halls of your high school, John.
Oh, that's so good.
Yeah.
My Super Mouth and Back to You are solo John credits.
Yeah. You know, they're great.
My
they're
Super
good.
Mouth is a great track, dude. That's a really good song.
I still prefer the Room for Squares versions of these songs, of all three of them. Of these first three, I prefer, and we're going to get to Neon, which is obviously...
Well, no, Back to You, I prefer, obviously, the Room for Squares one. It's just more polished, especially if you're going to try a full band run of it, but I prefer the acoustic versions of... That's just how I learned the songs. Yeah. Special place in my heart and whatnot.
So we move on to Neon, which is another Cook, which is, you know, which is the classic and most would argue the best recorded version of this song as far as non-live. You know, better than the Room for Squares version. And I'm going to be honest with you. For the most part, this is the first track I listen to. I skip the first three a lot of times of Inside Wants Out. Because I'm like, if I'm going to listen to No Such Thing, I want to listen to it on Room for Squares. If I'm going to listen to My Stupid Mouth, that's what I'm going to listen to. So back to you. So
I'm just going to make noises at you.
So I go, like, I used to just insert the CD, 1, 2, 3, and go on to 4. Start with 4. Because,
I mean,
at least
you're starting on like the best song on the entire thing. That's
so
whatever.
You know, take away my fan card, that's fine. But again, the first three are strong songs, but on this album, the last half of this album is what I love. Starting here, moving through the whole rest. The other three, I think, are probably stronger songs, and that's why they ended up on Room for Squares. That's why they're the first. Let's say we didn't have Room for Squares, I might be different. I might actually think differently about it. But because I have Room for Squares, I'm like, I want to listen to that. Like, I don't want to listen to the slow tempo. You know, I want the energetic. You know, or I'll go listen to Any Given Thursday's version. Anyway, okay. I see your scorn.
I don't like it. I don't like this opinion. We were bound to disagree sometime.
That's right. That's okay. That's all right. But we definitely agree here. Neon. Whenever you hear him, you hear the chair, you know, at the beginning.
And then he starts
playing.
That tells you it's one take, too. And that's makes it even better. Makes it even better.
What can we say about this version of Neon?
It stresses me out. No.
It's impossible to play.
Because I think about all the stuff he's doing. It's super difficult. But once you get this, once you learn how to pick like that, because he's...
Yeah.
This will stress guitarists out even more. He is only using his thumb and index finger when he's playing this song. And if you're a guitarist, you're like, how is he doing that? It doesn't make sense.
Yeah,
how is he doing
because
that?
I would use at least the next two fingers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that would be...
The only part
more
that he doesn't
quote, unquote,
is like the bridge part.
Precise.
Yeah.
That would be quote unquote more precise.
And
what makes the song the song is that it's not precise.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's
except
it's,
for the bridge. The bridge part, he does do the correct quote unquote version, the way to finger pick that he normally does. But yeah, and he said it at a show. I think it was in Japan or something. He like stopped in the middle of the song and he's like, guitarists always ask me, how do I play the song? And he's like, it's just this. And then he stopped playing the chords. And he was just doing the hand part, not playing the chords. Just doing the hand part. And he's like, it's just my thumb and my index finger.
Well, and you can see him do it on Any Given Thursday when he plays it at the end.
Mm-hmm.
You can see it real well. His hand is very flat. Almost like his right hand is flat and he's just kind of doing that almost like a wave, like,
right,
you know. And anyway, yeah, so
yeah, well, I'm sorry, that's it, that's the mm-hmm. magic ingredient. Once you learn that part, guitarists, you just add in the chords,
the chords are what my hand's small.
The chords,
I can't do anything with my thumb. I start getting a lot of pain in my thumb when I try and do the thumb part.
I get
at the
that.
Top
And I don't, anyway. For a lot of the chords in here, I don't use the thumb. I did play this on my last live stream, and it wasn't that horrible. So, like, I'm starting to get more comfortable with this version of finger picking, which is kind of like, yay, confidence boost a little bit.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can just tell that it's like one take, and it's so good, dude.
Again, drop C. Not a lot of songs are in drop C.
No.
I mean, unless you're like a death doom metal band or something. But.
Right. And but, if you're in drop C, you have like a baritone guitar and you're like,
or you're playing a 7-string.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You're like in a 7-string and it's way lower than C.
Yeah. So, but like,
the key is at least.
But drop C, I mean, who would have known that it would have sounded this good?
Yeah.
Such a great version of God. I remember the first time hearing this, I definitely heard the other version first. And as I mentioned on our Room for Squares episode, you can't really tell how complicated the song is until you hear it here, until you hear it acoustic. Then you're like, oh, there's a lot going on here that John's doing. So we love Neon. It'll always be a fan favorite.
So much, dude.
Can you believe that it was one of the first songs? And what do you think Clay Cook wrote? Do you think maybe he wrote the lyrics, some of the lyrics?
I think it was a collaboration of melody and lyrics.
Okay.
Honestly,
I feel like
he plays this. He covers this, and it's a slow piano version, and it's beautiful. And I'm like, did not think that would be good on piano, but it's super good.
Nice.
I want to learn it, man. It's really good. I highly recommend going to check that out.
I feel like John wrote the guitar part. I could be wrong on that, but I feel like he probably wrote the guitar part.
Yeah. Maybe they came up with the chords because they both went to Berkeley. They know the weird chords. Yeah. And then John was like, well, what if we
do that? What if I started doing this?
Yeah. What if we started just moving our finger and hand, you know? It's great.
Any more thoughts on Neon?
I don't know. This is John's gift to music, this song.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love it so much.
I think that song stands the test. And is one of the ones you think about that he never really stopped playing from the early time. Like, he went through a phase where he didn't really do No Such Thing or Your Body's a Wonderland or, you know, stuff like that. Man. But this song always kind of had a standard bear, like stood the test.
And this is the song that makes other guitarists go, oh, that's who John Mayer is.
Yeah.
Because anytime I would play this for other people, we would just geek out over it anytime. Yeah. And especially like when I was in middle school. Was it middle school? High school. And me and my musician friend, Colin, who I'm going to try really hard to get on the show, but he's an in-demand musician. Let's put it that way. He's a full-time musician. He's really, really good. He's probably the best musician I know, period. He can play this and any John Mayer thing with ease. It's like no struggle for him at all. But like him and I would jam. And it was really just me watching him going, how are you doing this? Because he's so good on guitar.
Yeah.
But yeah, he and I would jam and we would just play Inside of Wants Out over and over again. And Neon was the one that he, like, I mean, that was the one that we were both like, can you believe Neon exists? So this is the one that a lot of musicians come together over. This is a song that unites people.
Well, let's move on to Victoria.
Yeah, it doesn't unite people. No, I'm just kidding.
I love the song. This is one of my favorites. Very easy to play. Super melodic. Oh my gosh, this song is so melodic. And again, it's simple, but just the perspective and the lyrical content, and the perspective of the singer, the person who's telling the story, is just so unique. Like, you don't get a story, you know, I get the, oh, my girlfriend left me story. No, this is my roommate's girlfriend left me, left him. And she came and told me about it. And now I'm here telling you.
I wonder if that, did we already guess about this before? I wonder if he really happened, or if it was he got broken up with this way and he decided to tell his story through the other.
I have no idea. Yeah. Who's Victoria? Is it is Tori just a name, right? Sometimes that we do that, right? We just pick a name.
Or we just make up in a scenario like this. Oh, that would be or something that happened to a friend. Like, oh, that's interesting and sad way to break up with somebody, I guess.
Right. Yeah. Who knows?
I think it was obvious that he was going through an OK Computer phase in Radiohead when he wrote this, because you have two very, very distinct Radiohead parts in this song. Karma Police is like the most obvious one. Yeah. It's like the same chords and the same key change in the chorus. And then there's Lucky, which is that's a later track on OK Computer, but it's the same album. And that is where the doom ba doo 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 duh, you can kind of hear it in Lucky, where it's it's a little different,
okay,
but the sentiment is there with the low E string. It's a little similar, but yeah, Karma Police is like, cool, I mean, part. even John
he puts it together, like,
puts it together, does like a mishmash of Karma Police and Victoria, because they're so similar that clearly he was inspired by it when he wrote Victoria, which I love, because Radiohead's like my favorite band of all time, so that, I love that.
There you go.
I love that. And that's like my favorite album, so that's good.
Yeah, I pitted this against Comfortable for a mayor battle. And, it was about 60-40, 60% Comfortable, shocking 40% Victoria. Was that shocking to you?
Shocking to me, yes. I mean, Comfortable is just so, so much better.
See, I don't know if I could pick. This is a hard one for me. But I think
because Victoria is a little bit more derivative. A little bit more musically speaking, I think that's why I would especially go Comfortable.
I think you're right. I agree with that. I would pick Comfortable, but Victoria does hold a special place in my heart, and
it's really good. And I do love that part we were just mentioning with the seeing her soon, whatever the lyrics are. Part with the low E. I love the way it resonates on the recording. It's just so good.
Yeah, and it's just quiet. Like, it's just bum bum two. Three measures of silence. I mean, three beats of silence.
Yeah. You know, and even when he plays it live, he did I watched a horrible recording of it, but it was like during like the pre-Battle Studies tour or something. And he was doing a medley of his own stuff and trying to remember the chords.
Yeah, I love that.
And he's like, why isn't there a teleprompter for chords? He was like so upset. So when he finally remembered that part, you see him. He had like a minute, because as soon as you hit the C, that's a C, everybody. As soon as he hits the C, he pumps his fist. He's like, yes, I figured it out. And people start clapping because like there's a long break there. There's like a applause break. Yeah, it's gutsy. I love that part, and I love the solo. The solo's so simple.
Oh, the solo is great.
But it emphasizes the melancholy of this song so beautifully. It's just beautiful.
That's a great, great, great solo.
Yeah.
I also love just kind of how it builds, like each verse, kind of the chords are the same, but at the very beginning he's finger picking, and then he strums and finger picks a little bit, and then by the third verse he's strumming, and it just kind of, you know, grows a little bit there.
Yeah, then Then it goes downhill and a little bit on the whatever. Then he goes back to the finger.
He goes back down. He closes back to it out.
It's good. Let's dynamic move on to Love Soon. Well, let's move on to Love this Soon. Song and Victoria. They did on the Lo-Fi Masters demo and full band.
Okay.
Very weird.
Love Soon full band.
We will discuss it.
Okay,
it's weird.
One day.
It's
super
weird.
Okay. this is, again, another Clay Cook. And so Victoria was John Mayer, but was recorded by Clay Cook. He plays all the guitars in Victoria. Is that correct? John only sings? That's what I read. I read that on Victoria... It was actually, am I getting that right? Or am I thinking Comfortable?
Comfortable is the only one that Clay Cook is on this, since it's like from the Lo-Fi Masters demo.
And that must be the one that I'm talking about, where
You can tell that somebody else is playing guitar on Comfortable. It doesn't sound like John playing guitar.
I think that's it. I think he's the only one. I think only John only does the vocals on Comfortable. That's what the one I'm thinking. Okay. So then you have Love Soon, another Clay Cook co-write. Up-tempo, fun, you know.
I listened to the Lo-Fi Masters demo before this too. The first comment on there is track one, which is Love Soon. Track one is so Berkeley. Which is... It's just like kind of an interesting way to look at it, because it's like two guys wrote a song to sound really impressive and clever on guitar, because the chord changes are super unpredictable and jazzy. The rhythmic changes are kind of jazzy.
Yeah.
Everything's very, it's very trying to be unpredictable. I still like the song so much, dude. It's so fun to play. But I can see where that comment comes from. I'm like, yeah, they are definitely trying hard to impress right now.
Yeah. Again, this is a fun song. It's definitely a deep cut on this album. Mm-hmm. On this EP, if you will.
ELP.
Yeah. So, I don't have much to say about the song. It's fun. It's kind of witty, know, as far as the lyrics go, and
love the chords, dude. I love the chords more than I love the lyrical content, but I do like that the lyrics are kind of like fed up though with like, all right, you know what? You know, I'm done sticking my neck out for this. I'm just going to straight up say, you know, we're in love, right? I mean, let's just not even have the conversation.
Yeah.
This is love.
Well, again, you know, similar theme in Man on the Side, similar thing in...
It's a little bit different than this one because it's... You know, that's fair.
You know, just similar...
I thought this one was like he was already in the relationship, right?
And he is, but he's kind of like low-key, right? Like she doesn't want anybody to know.
Oh,
like she's like hiding him, and it's
your
like
friends,
you know, like they don't know.
You haven't mentioned me.
Yeah, it's like, why haven't you? You know, are you embarrassed by me? Like, are you ashamed? You know, you just why don't you want? You know, it's one of those things that some people can relate to that, right? Like, you have a relationship with someone, and you're just like, I really like this person, but I don't know how my friends or my family or so and so is gonna view this or whatever. So, but again, you know, he would revisit that type of theme of kind of being the side guy.
Yeah.
You know, the guy that...
I like this version of it. A Man on the Side's more kind of obvious with it or whatever, but I like this version of it, too, where it's kind of like... Or it's, especially the way that the lyrics kind of rhythmically, I don't know, fit the mouth, however you want to phrase it.
Yeah,
it's just the way the rhythmically the lyrics just fit so well in that chorus. I love the I love the timing of the chords too, man. It's so weird. We're like, because it's just that's what it is. It's so unpredictable. Even though people were kind of like not bashing it, but just observing that it is a little try hard sometimes. But like, I like it. So,
I like
but
song.
Yeah, but going from the pre-chorus to the chorus is like a cool part where it's this time that we say it. Duh, duh. Like there's it's not like on the one, it's like on the and or something.
I definitely like this better than Love Song for No One. So on the
same,
mayor battle,
thank you.
Love Soon versus Love Song for No One, this one's better.
Thank you. I fully agree with you.
Which that's a Clay Cook song.
I don't
too,
hate Love Song for No One,
right?
But...
That's a Clay Cook. Those are both Cook songs.
Yeah, I think Clay he was Cook credited.
No,
oh, no.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's right. I was about to say though, I thought De La was credited, but then he's not.
All right. We move on to Comfortable.
Yeah, this is my, I mean, if Neon didn't exist, this would be my favorite song on the entire thing.
I think mine too.
But Neon is just like steamrolls everything on this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
it's
yeah.
It's not even fair.
You know, it's just, it's like, it's not even fair. There are stronger songs, and then there's Neon, which is just like, it just crushes the rest of this album. But Comfortable, super cool. Strings are nice. Again, the lyrical content, this is just great songwriting.
I agree. This is one that Comfortable, Neon, and No Such Things are ones that Clay Cook still occasionally plays at live shows. He still covers them.
That's
Comfortable.
Cool.
He doesn't really. Comfortable is the only one that doesn't really change much because I think the arrangement of the guitar is a lot is just him.
That's cool.
And John arranged the strings on this song, which is awesome. The strings are so good on this song.
Yeah, they're really, really good. This is a fan favorite. Any Given Thursday version of the song. Oh my gosh.
Oh, it's so good, man. Talk about understanding what the song is trying to say and stuff.
I know.
With that intro, and I think that's the most he's talked about the song in that interview after the show.
Yeah.
That's on the DVD. I think that's the most he's talked or dissected the song, at least in an interview, where he talks about how the lyrics are so conversational despite it being such an opera or such a classically constructed song where it's just kind of like, you should be singing like, his example was, you are my ocean, you are my star. Yeah. You are my ocean, you are my star. But it's just more like, hey, man, remember that time we were at the market?
Yeah.
And I love that.
It. I love it too, it's, yeah. Just the juxtaposition of those two things.
Yes. Yeah.
So this is one of my favorites. Neon from Neon On is just like, I don't skip anything. So
yes,
that's a, this is such a strong ending to this EP.
I agree.
Then we move on to Neon 1247 AM.
Yeah, that's the original version. Yeah.
The original. So
it's
I want
the original
to
version
in
of this album included an instrumental version of Neon. Yeah.
Which is basically the precursor to the Room for Squares version.
Mm-hmm.
Because it sounds like that, you know, the drums and it's a full band of them just jamming to Neon, right?
Yeah.
For like 2.5 minutes or something like that. And I guess maybe that's where they went, oh, if you're going to do Neon, you should do this version. Like, this is what's going to make sense on the album. Probably like the producers or Columbia or whatever said, like, if you're going to do Neon, do this version with the lyrics. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then
it's hard. It's really, really hard to sell. Like, even no matter how jazzy and rhythmic and he's doing his own percussion on the guitar, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I mean, labels prefer the drums, man. They prefer the full band sound.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's
more
marketable on a big LP.
Well, there's no, acoustic songs, like purely acoustic songs on Room for Squares.
Yeah.
Everything has a band, everything has a backing band to it.
Even some of them that are like, oh, you didn't really need a
Like My Stupid Mouth drums really didn't need it.
You didn't need it on Not Myself, St. Patrick's Day, but it
still
works. Like, it's all there and it works.
So then we got Quiet, which is a great closer.
Oh, man, what a great closer. I love this song, dude. This is like my life right now.
Yeah. The song feels like the lyrics. And and again, he has a way of putting you, like taking you somewhere. Like, if you close your eyes and listen to the song in put on good headphones, close your eyes and listen to the song. Don't do anything else. You're there. Like, you're imagining all the things.
I love the way you put the song, or the lyrics make you feel this. Is that what you said? The lyrics make you
feel
the song.
The song feels like the lyrics.
Yes, I love the way you put that, because I was like, oh my god, that's exactly.
It's weird. It's just weird.
That's exactly what it is, man. That's what makes this song so special, I think.
The song and the lyrics are like this. Like, some of these other songs, not to bash them, but you could put other lyrics to some of these other songs. They could have different content. But the music on Quiet matches and goes with the lyrics so well. Like, it was like they were written for each other.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's,
this is a fun one to play too, honestly. But yeah, I love the lyrics are definitely my favorite part, especially because I'm a guy that's worked overnight on the overnight shift, third shift, whatever you call it officially, for many years, a couple years now at my current job, 3 years or so at my current job. And then like several years before that at a previous job. And like everything that's laid out here is like the feet walk the halls and stuff like that. You can hear the world waking up.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can hear the world waking up when you're on that shift and you're like, oh, it's time for me to go to bed then. Like, like, it's just everything is, but this is more about him kind of being trapped in his own mind, his insecurities because the world's too quiet. And when the world wakes up around him, he feels more secure. And, I love that story that he paints there, because it is kind of true. You kind of lose your sanity when it's just you and your brain. So I love the story that he's painting here. It's so relatable to me.
You know, I love when the bridge. The bridge of this song is so, like, when it starts to build a little bit and he kind of starts playing those open chords. Oh, man. Cars start, feet walk the halls. Like, and
I
love
the tricky finger picking part too that it closes with in that bridge. I just wanted to shout that out. That's
Well, when he starts saying at the 302, space in this room is turned on me, right? So like I've been here, now it's like I'm starting to feel like, oh my gosh, what's happening? And All of my fears have cornered me here, me and my TV screen. We've all been at that time where it's like we can't sleep, so we turn on the TV. Or, you know, you could even say me and my phone screen now. Because, mm-hmm. like, it's just like, and then he says the volume's down, blue lights are dancing around. I can see that in my mind. Mm-hmm. Of just, like, being in a room, maybe on the couch, and the TV's on. You're kind of in and out of sleep. You've turned the volume down, but you haven't turned the TV off yet. And maybe they're static, maybe it's just, you know, whatever's on there, but that is illuminating. That's the only illumination of the room.
Yeah.
So then that idea of like blue lights dancing around, there's still a picture happening on the screen and it's illuminating the room and it's kind of making it that blue color that you get from a TV being on. He just paints such a good picture with his lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
Similar to 3x5, right? Just how he paints a picture of the way. That's another song, actually, where the lyrics sound like the music sounds like the lyrics a little bit there. But
yeah.
Anyway, this was a great option. Perfect for a closing song. Yeah. So.
And I think that song is interesting, musically speaking, at least on guitar, because if you remove the capo, it's basically like 83. The chords are 83.
Yeah, they are. I remember learning that, and I was like, oh, wait, this is the same shapes.
Even when you change sections, it's like the same thing in 83. So like,
here's what I want to ask you as we kind of end this. Just let's end it with this. Why did Back to You, No Such Thing, My Stupid Mouth, and Neon make the next album, but the other ones didn't? What do you think?
That's a really good question. Maybe I might be giving the label the benefit of the doubt. I don't know how much say Mayer had as the artist. Maybe they were like, here are your most marketable songs on the EP, yeah. and we can only take a handful of these because the rest of them we want to be exclusive to this album. We yeah. want new songs on this album. So I can actually kind of respect that.
Yeah. But
maybe it was just kind of, I'm hoping that they respect it as well, that maybe the best versions of the songs that closed Inside Wants Out were the best.
That was it. Yeah. You're not going to be able to yeah. do much to adding a backing band record, to Quiet isn't going to do
yeah.
anything.
I mean, what's that going to do? Yeah. And Comfortable is already perfect. I mean, they got it from the Lo-Fi Masters demo
right.
as it was and just remixed it a little bit. It was already perfect with the strings.
Right.
And Victoria, they tried it with a band on the Lo-Fi Masters demo. Doesn't sound very good. So why bring it up again?
So I have a little bit of a theory, maybe. It may not even work right. But do you think that they chose... So No Such Thing in Neon, I think they're like, we have to put those on. Those are the, you know, two of the best songs mm-hmm. on this. But... outside of Quiet and Victoria, which probably wouldn't make sense, you have Love Soon and Comfortable, both written by Clay Cook.
Yeah.
Maybe why don't we choose like, My Stupid Mouth and Back to You instead, because those are written just by John Mayer and we're right. not going to have to mess with Cook on this. You yeah. only have two songs that made it over, No Such Thing in Neon, that made it over to that were Clay Cook songs. But then you also have Love Song for No One, which wasn't yeah. on this, which made it on as the Clay Cook song. So I don't know. Maybe that theory's out. I don't know if that had anything to do with it. If that maybe
I don't think so
partially.
Because No Such Thing ended up being a single. That's so true, like yeah. that ended up and, like launching John Mayer.
And he ends up playing Man on the Side on Any Given Thursday. Like
Clay Cook still says before he plays No Such Thing at gigs, this is the song that pays for my house. So
oh, dude, I can't imagine the checks he gets for these songs.
I know. I wanted to mention as well, I already mentioned it briefly earlier, but Love Soon opens the Lo-Fi Masters demo and it's okay. full band.
Uh-huh.
So again, I feel like the studio heard that and Victoria full band and said, no.
Yeah, because you know dude. They probably had that too, right? Like they're like,
yeah,
here's
they
a bunch of recordings of John stuff.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. So
they had to have, dude. It was not. It's not good.
All right, man. Well, we did it again, and we went through an EP yeah. in an hour and 20 minutes. So that's not bad. You know, we're under an hour and 30 minutes. Usually, we're up to 2 hours on these episodes. So,
yeah.
We did it well today, Jeff.
I applaud us.
We'll be back next week. I'm hoping we can get some Mayorcraft Carrier off the ground, but we'll see. We'll have to figure out what we're going to do. Maybe we'll do a listen through or something next time, but we will be back next week. If you have any thoughts about the show, email us, mystupidpodcastshow@gmail.com. Don't forget to follow us on all the socials. Leave us a positive review on Apple Podcasts and iTunes and Spotify or wherever you listen. I don't even know if you can leave reviews on those other platforms, but if you can,
I don't know either.
If you can, if you can rate, if you can follow, whatever you can do to help spread the love here, we would appreciate that. So if there's nothing else, Jeff, we will see y'all next week. Does that sound good?
Yeah.
All right. Well, y'all have a great week, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, everyone. Stay safe.